This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Have you tried changing your health year on year, resolving that this year things are going to be different, but nothing seems to change? Oftentimes, when things are not changing, we are following many wellness myths and not looking at the full picture, including our nutrition, recovery, stress management, leaving out mind-body connection. I want to introduce you to Wellness Redefined, a new podcast from Refillion Media that's here to dispel all your myths about wellness and fitness while sharing stories of how we've redefined what it means to be healthy. On each episode, we'll be talking to experts from all walks of life who will share their own unique wellness journey and offer their perspective. I am your host, Tamika Rochester, founder and CEO of Harlem Cycle, a premier wellness space in New York City with a focus on indoor cycling. I've been an advocate for wellness since as early as I can remember. So if this sounds like something that could help change your life, go ahead and pause the show you're listening to and subscribe to Wellness Redefined on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to American Muslim Project. I'm Asad Butt. American Muslim Project is a podcast where we share the contributions Muslims are making to American life. In each episode, we elevate unique Muslim voices that are shaping this American experience. My guest today is Serena Rasool, an actress, writer, and founder of Muslim American Casting. Muslim American Casting is a company that provides diverse Muslim talent to film, TV, and commercials. It also does a lot of consulting work with Hollywood to make sure Muslims are represented accurately and fairly. Serena is a daughter of Palestinian immigrants and grew up in Southwest Virginia. Before launching Muslim American Casting, Serena actually spent many years working in government while pursuing acting gigs on the side. She's had parts in House of Cards and Veep, amongst other things. My first question to her was to tell us a little bit about Muslim American Casting.
So thank you so much, Asad, for having me. I appreciate it. I'm really excited to be here. Muslim American Casting is a casting agency that casts Muslims and Muslim talent specifically into TV, commercials, and film. And our goal is to highlight Muslim talent, the diversity within the Muslim talent community, and specifically for there to really never be the excuse that we can't be found or that we weren't accessible. We have so many wonderful, wonderful creators in our community, and I really wanted to highlight and give them a space. I'm a creator myself, and I just didn't really feel like I had a home, per se, when it came to this industry, so I wanted to create that space.
And you just launched it just a couple months ago, right, in January?
Yeah, alhamdulillah, like we just launched January 21st. 2021, and that was the day the Muslim ban was, the executive order was repealed.
Nice.
We really wanted to launch on a day of significance, and that was a very important day for me and for our industry and for our community. You know, that's when I decided, like, it's time to shed the stereotypes and the troping and really just tell our stories. You know, humanize ourselves in a way that we've been dehumanized for so long in the mainstream. And I really wanted to create the space for the rich diversity of our stories.
Yeah. Can you share some of the tropes and the stereotypes of American Muslims in movies, TV, cinema?
Yeah. So there's a really great study that was done that it's called 100 Years of Muslims in Hollywood. And that study is really great because it goes through the 100 years of stereotyping and troping. And it's funny because we went through different evolutions, I guess, in the stereotyping world. We started off as, of course, being orientalized and exoticized and fetishized. So 1921 was the first film called The Sheikh, where Robert Valentino played this, you know, exoticized Sheikh, that really sets the tone for the next 100 years of Muslims in the American film space.
Yeah, it's interesting that that's like, to me, 1921 is the early days of cinema. So this is, we're exactly. talking about like since the very beginning.
Exactly. It was a silent film, actually. And so from the beginning of film, we've been misrepresented. And so, and that stereotyping, that troping, and that misrepresentation has manifested itself in different forms. You really start to see the otherism occur, that the xenophobia really starts to set in as we approached the political turmoil of the 70s and the 80s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, really. And you saw a slew of films that came out after the Iranian Revolution. And you see the continued portrayal of Muslims, Middle Easterners, as the quote-unquote terrorist. Women went from, you know, this exoticized, fetishized to completely covered, voiceless kind of entity in the background. We've gone through various phases in American film. We're at a point where we're starting to see a small opening where Hollywood is starting to tell some underrepresented stories of underrepresented communities, but there's a lot of work to do. There's a long way to go.
Yeah, no doubt. I want to learn a little bit more about Muslim American casting. I mean, I think someone who's not in the industry, I think about, you know, Muslim American casting, you are helping whatever producers, directors cast for these roles. But I think there's more to that that you're doing, right? Can you talk a little bit more about what initiatives Muslim American casting is doing?
Yeah, so there's two sides. And what I found is there's a lot of disinformation or just incorrect information out there regarding Muslims and Muslim talent. I really wanted to focus on the casting, but I found myself having to explain a lot. And so I developed a consulting arm. And so the consulting arm is kind of taking on this, it's become a beast of its own. It's just taking on this, almost this advocacy space. And you know, there are a lot of casting directors, there are producers, there are filmmakers who just lack some just very basic information with regards to our population. You know, the American Muslim population is very diverse.
Right.
You know, a fourth of our population are Black Muslims, a fourth are South Asian Muslims, a fourth are Arabs, and then a fourth are a mixture of a wide variety of Muslims. And it time and time again, they're shocked to learn that, right?
Right, of course. Yeah, I mean, I was too when I first learned all about that too. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they're shocked to learn that we're such a diverse group. And so my goal has been to build a very, very diverse database. So I've been reaching out to a multitude of, you know, demographics, nationalities within our community to make sure that they're included. And so we've built this database of actors and writers, a few directors and producers. And the goal is to approach filmmakers and producers and say, we have the talent, we have the diversity of talent, and no more excuses that we don't exist. You know, we need to be in the writers' rooms telling our own stories. If you're going to film about us or film about the Middle East, there should be Muslim writers in those rooms. There should be Muslim, we call it below the line, which are folks that are producers and, you know, set designers and, you know, costume designers and you name it. We should just be present because we have the talent. You know, the Muslim community, we have a vast number of lawyers and executives, right?
Yeah.
Why not enter the entertainment world, right? Like, why not enter that space and create an executive pipeline where we can work our way up into these big studios and networks so that we do create that network that our creators can then call on when we have something great, when we have a really great story to tell.
You're an actress yourself, and I guess this was kind of born out of your experience, I'm guessing, dealing with directors, producers, and whatnot. You shared a story once about you were once cast to wear hijab on set. Can you share share that story and how that helped kind of spur Muslim American casting?
Sure. So I was cast on a show. It was a pretty big network. I won't name names, but you know, the reason I say that is because they had the budget and they cast myself and two other actors to wear hijab for this particular scene. It was a very benign scene. It was a prayer breakfast. I got to set and went to wardrobe and found they didn't have hijabs. They didn't have scarves. You know, I was like, don't worry, let me run to my car, see what I can find. And I was, you know, I managed to have a couple scarves in the trunk.
Sure.
And I went back to set and I asked wardrobe. I said, okay, I know, you know, it's not a big deal, but where are these individuals supposed to be from? Because if it's a woman that's from the Gulf versus from Sudan versus from Pakistan, you know, everybody or an American Muslim, everybody wears their hijab a little bit different. And it can be in some cases based on where you're from. So I asked, you know, where are these individuals supposed to be from? And they responded, we don't know, just make them look Muslim.
Wow.
And wardrobe was doing a fantastic job. So you know, I don't expect them to know everything about everyone, right? Like, I wouldn't expect that. But I was just kind of shocked and taken aback because I was talent and I was the only one on this giant set that could do this. And so I took the scarves and I styled, you know, myself and the two other women, and we went and we filmed. And that sat with me for a while. That sat with me for a couple of years. It was just kind of shocking to me, coming from a community where I guess it's just so common that to be on a set with so many people and to have been the only Muslim was just kind of shocking. And it sat with me to the extent that it really was what kind of spurred me to want to do this, to want to found Muslim American Casting.
You transitioned from a different career into acting and the Muslim American Casting. Is that right?
Yeah. So, you know, just like any child of immigrants.
And you're a daughter of Palestinian, yes, immigrants. Is that
Palestinian,
right?
Palestinian. Yes. Palestinian immigrants. And so, of course, I was supposed to be the doctor, but to their sore disappointment. I love doing impressions as a child. And so I would actually impersonate my parents and their accents all the time. And growing up where I did, it was just a way that I disarmed the people around me. I grew up in Southwest Virginia, where we were the only Muslims for hours.
Wow.
And, you know, we were so different. We were so novel to the folks around us that I just felt like the only way I could disarm or feel like I belonged was to make them laugh. And, you know, looking back, I don't think that that should have been my burden, but I took it on as a child. And I would do funny impressions of teachers and my parents. And I would come to school and tell my friends, you know, oh, you'll never believe what my dad did today, like what kind of antics he got into. And then I would, you know, put on this little show, you know, using that as a career in the future. I always knew that it's something I wanted to do, but I couldn't do because, you know, the reality is my parents came here and sacrificed their lives. You know, my mom, she was the oldest of six. She was left in Palestine for a year by herself at the age of 11, taking care of six younger siblings. Wow. Completely on her own, and then eventually came to the United States. And they sacrificed so much to get here that I didn't have the heart to say, hey, I want to do stand up. Like, what do you think? Not that there's anything wrong with that. I love stand up and I still do it on occasion, but I just felt this very heavy, heavy sense of responsibility.
Sure.
And so I went on, I went to the University of Virginia and I got, you know, several degrees. I got a bachelor's degree in cognitive science and then a bachelor's degree in in foreign affairs. And then went on to get my master's degree in public health from George Washington. So I did all the right things.
Yeah, you did everything right.
Good Muslim girl, right? Like, I checked all the boxes.
Did you get married and provide kids too? Is that, I mean, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I did.
You are a success then. At least in your parents' eyes, you know.
Yeah. So it's funny because, you know, now when I'm telling them I'm doing this entertainment stuff, and my dad is like, "What do I care? You're married. Like, what do I care?" Like, okay. And I'm like, "Really? Really? Like now? Really?" He's like, "Well, you know, you're living your life now. You get to live." And I was like, "Really?"
That's very funny.
You know, that's all to say that, and I think this is just, it's so child of immigrants story. Like everybody can kind of relate to that, feeling that heaviness, that sense of responsibility, and almost like you have to pay back your parents for like what they've been through. I wanted to explore it earlier on, and you know, I wish I could have, I wish I had the courage to, you know, I always did it on the side. I always took classes on the side. I always was anything I could get on the side, I did. But I, you know, still had that regular 9-to-5 to just pay the bills until I could fulfill that creative void that I felt.
Yeah. And can you tell me more about your parents now and their reaction to what you're doing? And what do they think about Muslim American casting?
Yeah. So they still don't really understand. They're like, nice. So wait. You get paid to find people? I'm like, okay, sort of, like, sort of. And they're like, really? Like, that's it? Like, I could find you anybody. Let me just call, like, my uncle. Like, you know, and so for them, this is like, you know, it's the easiest thing you could possibly do was to connect people because they're connectors. I mean, like, when you're an immigrant, you are by default searching the country.
Yeah.
For people like you. So they're very supportive at this point. And, you know, they want me to work towards a positive goal and towards a positive end. And if that means like fulfilling this creative side in this way, they're on board. Now, ask me that if I told them I wanted to found a Muslim casting agency at the age of 18, I don't think they would have had the same response.
My conversation with Serena Rasool from Muslim American Casting will return right after the break. This is American Muslim Project.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Welcome back. My guest today is Serena Rasool from Muslim American Casting. Serena grew up in a small, rural, mostly white community where there were no other Muslim families around for hours. I asked her what that was like.
Yeah, so it was very white community. And so I used to be, you know, I used to be ashamed, but now I'm very proud. You know, I grew up from very, very, very humble beginnings. We ran a corner store. You know, we were the typical, you know, gas station owners. And I worked in the gas station from a very, very young age. I would pull up a milk crate and, you know, ring up whoever came into the store. And I got to see such a vast array of folks, right? People who have experienced life in so many different ways just from being in the grocery store, being in the gas station. You know, when I went to school, I was the only one. I mean, I honestly, when I say I'm the only one, we were the only Muslims around. And it was very isolating. There wasn't a mosque. There weren't Arabic classes or Islamic school to attend.
How did you end up there?
So we ended up there. It's funny because all of my family ended up in either Ohio or Florida. And there's some in Northern Virginia, but all of my dad's side of the family ended up in Ohio, and they all live like very close to each other. And, you know, they have their own little like sub community, and they've all grown up together, and they're very close. And we kind of were just, you know, these lepers, right, who had country accents. And how we ended up there is my dad, you know, just like any kind of immigrant who comes to the country, he was always looking for the next big you know, opportunity, and somebody told him, hey, there's this store, you can, you know, there's this community that needs a store owner, and you can do it. And so he kind of just kept driving around there's this main highway in Virginia, and stumbled upon this small town. And my dad, he grew up in the Middle East. He grew up on, like, you know, these Western films. And so he had this idea of America just being like this small town kind of situation.
Oh,
right? Where, you know, he literally envisioned kind of like a Mayberry, and that's what he was looking for. He was looking for the Andy Griffith Mayberry.
Wow. And this, I'm thinking this is the '70s that he's looking, 70s, 80s.
And he wanted that. Yeah, it was the '80s. He wanted that small town feel, because he himself comes from a very small town in Palestine. The city life was just, it was foreign to him in any context, right? So if he could own like acres and acres of land, for a Palestinian, that's like amazing, right?
That's huge, yeah, for sure.
And so he found this, you know, this small town and decided, you know, he's going to raise us. And he literally bought, I kid you not, 8 acres of land with a ranch, an 8-stall horse ranch. and a house. And we grew up, you know, with horses and goats and chickens and rabbits and all kinds of animals.
I mean, this is a pilot to a TV show if I've ever heard one.
Isn't it? Because he was, that's how he grew up. I mean, he grew up around an agrarian society where he grew up on the land of Palestine. And so that's what he wanted us to experience, was like connection to the land and surviving off of the land and growing your own food and just feeling a connection to something bigger and larger than yourself.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a real American story right there.
It really, really is. Yeah. But, you know, as children, my parents were very stern, like they were very firm in their identity. But as children, I mean, we were completely lost, right? Like we were trying to navigate this space of, you know, we were browner than everyone else. We had different traditions, different religion, different language. We ate different foods. I mean, the stuff I would bring for lunch was just like, you know, if I wasn't a leper before, I was definitely a leper after. And so it was very, very difficult. It gave me this understanding of life that, it didn't really make me super, super relatable to the other Arab Americans or the other Muslims that I would encounter.
Oh, interesting.
But what I found was my parents were so firm in their faith that they were never scared of us experiencing the world around us. So, for example, as a child, I went to churches and synagogues and temples, and they never dissuaded us. So in the South, I mean, most of the folks there are Southern Baptists, right? Or they come from different denominations. And so, you know, I would always, on Sundays, sometimes I would just accompany a friend of mine to church because there was nothing else to do. I mean, the way the communities are in rural America, there, a lot of them are centered around the church. And people would ask my dad, you know, how do you let her do that? Or how do you just let her go on? And my dad's response was always, like, his response was always to let her experience God the way that others experience God will only bring her closer to God. That was the end goal, was always building and fostering a connection to God. You know, he did that at home with us, but he never saw it as a threat for us to experience it through the lens of others as well. So I grew up very different in the sense that it doesn't even faze me to go into a church, right? Like, or doesn't faze me to go into a synagogue or go into a temple. I just do. And it's, and I feel like sometimes that's a jarring for others from different faiths to kind of just see that. Yeah. But, for me, it's about an understanding that's much larger than ourselves and disconnecting from the ego.
Yeah. Did you ever wish that you were closer to family in Ohio and Florida?
Oh God, all the time. All the time. Yeah. I mean, seeing my cousins kind of grow up together, there were so many fun, amazing things that they got to do, travel together and laugh together and just go to the movies was something that you know, I couldn't do without a lot of planning and bringing, like, you know, my parent, my mom sure. along or somebody along, right? Whereas my yeah. cousins could kind of just freely socialize amongst themselves. You know, it was very different to want to socialize and be social in the context that we grew up in.
How do you approach your parenting now? You mentioned that do you have one child?
I have
child?
Two, yeah.
Two. How do you approach your parenting now based on your lived experience?
It's funny because I have a 5-year-old and I have a 1-year-old. I right now I'm in Northern Virginia, and Northern Virginia is the exact opposite of where I grew up, because it is just, I mean, you can walk into, there's a mall here that some people refer to as the Hijabi Mall, because there's just so many Muslims, there's so many Arabs around.
Wow.
That you can
I had no clue.
Yeah, there's such a vast community of Muslim Americans, and there, and of course, Arabs, Palestinians in Northern Virginia. So my children, you know, I constantly think about how different our childhoods are going to be, and how different my daughter's experience is going to be from mine, because she'll have friends who are going through the same things as her. And, you know, I hope it won't be as lonely and kind of isolating as it was sometimes for us. With regards to my approach, I definitely want to expose her, even though that community's here, I want to expose her to different faiths, different understandings, different people, different backgrounds, because I think that's only going to make her more resilient and stronger in her own identity.
That's amazing. One question that I like to ask people is, do you have a uniquely American Muslim experience that you want to share?
Yeah, so it's funny because I was thinking about that, and I think just my story that I shared a second ago about growing up in that context is very different from the other Muslims that I've met. Where I grew up, despite being surrounded by like 99% white Americans, those folks were also from humble beginnings. And where I found some common ground was that we were all kind of struggling to get by. Hmm. I remember, you know, I had friends that lived in, you know, very underserved communities and had parents that were barely getting by. I could relate to that. And that was one circumstance, that was one situation where I did feel like I belonged, because we were all kind of in this struggle together. We all kind of were trying to make it in America in a way. And so it took me until now to really realize that. I was never envious of someone having a nice car in high school, because nobody had nice cars, right? We all drove like, you know, a hand-me-down hunk of junks, right, from the junkyard. So that, you know, I was thankful for that context, at least.
I have lived most of my life in you know, the coastal cities, and so I don't have that experience of living in a small town. So it's been really informative for me. Is there anything else that you think that people should know about growing up Muslim in a small rural town?
There was definitely something unique about us, because we were able to, you know, de facto we became the representatives for the entire Muslim community. And I'm hoping that Muslim American Casting will not be that. I know that I will not speak on behalf of the entire yeah, Muslim community. Right. I'm done with that.
Sure.
Yeah. I will say there was something special about it. You know, I said earlier it was isolating at times, but it was also really empowering. And there were folks that were very sweet and very understanding and wanted to learn more. And, you know, I was fortunate in high school to find a group of friends that they didn't ask me on the weekends why I couldn't go out. They just knew, right? Like, and they just accepted me for me. And that, I'm so grateful to have found that small little enclave of folks that were able to embrace us and not ask the questions, why. Instead, they just accepted me for who I am.
Yeah, amazing. So Serena, if you are an up-and-coming actor or someone who has done some parts, how can they get involved with you? What should they be doing?
So that's awesome. Thank you for asking. We're collecting a large database. So anyone who is an actor, writer, director, or producer can add themselves to our database by visiting our website, which is MuslimAmericanCasting.com, and clicking on the talent tab, and they can just fill in their information from there. And we would love to have you. Again, we're just trying to build as vast the database as possible so that we can call on you when we get those opportunities. And of course, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Muslim Casting.
Serena, thanks so much for joining American Muslim Project. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm so glad to have been here.
I spoke to Serena in April 2021. I highly recommend you follow American Muslim Casting on Instagram. They've been featuring Muslim creatives every day this month. We'll have links to that and everything else that we talked about in our show notes. Thanks again for listening. Drop us a line on our website to let us know how we're doing, or if you know anyone that we should feature on the show, recommendations are always welcome. American Muslim Project is a production of Rafaelion Media. Today's show was produced and edited by Mark Anato, Lindsay Gamble, and me, Assad Butt. Simon Hutchinson did our theme music. You can find us online at AmericanMuslimProject.com.